Good morning.
Good morning.
Nice to be here this morning. I'm Bob Peterson, and I'm the President and CEO of Goodwill Industries of North Central Wisconsin. I've been responsible for leading at Goodwill for the last 21 years, and periodically Roger and I have these little chats. We go to lunch and we talk about stuff, and we were talking about a journey that I've been on for the last several years now, and he thought it might be useful for me to come here and chat with you a little bit about it as well. And last week, during his sermon, he gave me sort of the framework in which to sort of think and talk about this subject. When he was talking about this concept of binary thinking that he applied to gender identity, that we often go through the world thinking either or, male, female, boy, girl. And in this case, what I'd like to chat with you a little bit about is the whole concept of the criminal justice system and how we approach that, because I think my experience has been that we have dichotomous thinking about that as well. We think punishment and retribution on one hand, and then we think rehabilitation and restoration on the other. And the journey that I've been involved in, if any of you lived in Appleton in 2003, started just above the fold in the Post Crescent, when on a Sunday morning you went out to your porch and picked up a newspaper that said Goodwill has been involved in a major embezzlement. And the organization that I cared for and loved and led was now front page news in the Post Crescent. And you can well imagine when you're leading an organization and something like that happens, it's a panic point. It's a time when you begin to reflect and wonder, what's the impact of this exposure going to be? Will we lose reputation in community? Because the thing to understand is that an organization like Goodwill depends on the covenant that we create with the community that says, if you give us stuff, we'll do good stuff with it. And all of a sudden, we were in a situation where opportunity loss had occurred because a woman who worked for us for 26 years, a dedicated, faithful employee, managed to get involved in a gambling situation. And over a period of 7 years, left Goodwill with $525,000. Very, very difficult time in my life professionally. It took my eye off the game entirely for an entire year while we tried to figure out how to put it all back together again. One of the things to understand is during that time, and my friend John Weinberg is here, we were doing accounting services for other organizations. And so it was really critical that we maintained those relationships and kept that trust intact. And so what I want to do is just talk to you a little bit about the personal impact that that had on me in my life. You know, I'm sitting in my office in May of that year doing what I normally do, and the phone rings, and it's our chief financial officer who says we've got a problem. Our bank reconciliation doesn't balance. We're off by $75,000. The interesting thing is it's to the good. And the first impulse on the part of our auditors was to say, make a one-time adjustment. You've got a great team. It's apparently some sort of error. Fix it and move on, because not only is it an error, but it will enhance your balance sheet, so go ahead. And when you hear $75,000, whether it's positive or negative, it doesn't pass the sniff test. It feels like something's not right. And so I called our auditing team and I said, do you have a forensic auditor on your staff? And he said, yeah. And I said, well, I think I'd like to gather together a couple of our leaders and a couple of our board people and chat with them about this situation and get an impression from a forensic auditor around whether or not this was something that we needed to pay attention to. And so we did. And so we ultimately decided to change the scope and materiality of the audit. We were at $24 million a year in terms of top-line revenue that year, and so materiality was about $25,000. So we said, let's take it down to five and see what happens. And we did that. And when we took it down to five, it wasn't 2 hours and we started finding issues that really weren't comfortable. And the thing to understand is that the woman who was responsible for this part of our business had been with Goodwill Industries for 26 years. Loyal, trusted, capable, loved. And inside of Goodwill, we have a unique kind of culture because we do talk about loving our people and caring for them and having them be a part of our life. In fact, our first corporate value is we put people first. And so to be in a situation where suddenly somebody that we cared about, that we loved, that we had a relationship with, that we knew, at least we thought we knew well, was apparently behaving badly, very badly. And so during the course of that week, as we began to unbundle all of the ways that she was taking cash out of the organization, it became really clear that we were going to have to take action. And so on Thursday, it was determined that we would call the Menasha Police Department, and on Friday, it was determined that we would have her come to my office and kind of face us around these allegations. And I need to tell you that at that point, because of my nature, my personal nature, two things were happening. There was a battle going on in my soul about, I'm a rehabilitation professional, and I need to care for her. And on the other hand, I wish I could find a big enough baseball bat to hit her upside the head, that I would feel good about that. And it gets you into that whole business of thinking about, so how do we manage this? How do we deal with this emotionally? How does the culture manage this? How does our goodwill team manage this? It was really a tough time. So on that Friday afternoon, the police came. They arrested her. She went out of my office in cuffs. And it was Friday, after a very grueling week of discovery. And we thought, well, let's just go home and relax and take a deep breath, and on Monday we'll start to figure this out. And then one of the people on our team who's responsible for community relations said, yeah, but you know what, on Saturday morning, the reporters from the Post Crescent hit all the police stations, checked the blotter just to see what's going on in the community, and this is going to be discovered tomorrow morning, so we're going to have to begin to act very quickly around this. And so we did. We started to scramble. 10 other agencies to call because we did accounting services, all of our partners, our board members, our national organization, all of the people that are close to Goodwill, and we began that process. And the other thing that was decided was that I would go on point, and I would be responsible for talking to anybody who inquired from the press. And so I was tasked on Saturday morning to call my friend Andrew Opman, who was the editor of the Post Crescent at the time, and tell Andy that we had an issue at Goodwill, and to just let him be the first to know, because we had understand also that just that year Goodwill and the Post Crescent had the Partnership of the Year award for our Sackett drive. And so I gave Andy a call, and we chatted a little bit, and I'll never forget these words. He said, in a minute we're going to hang up, and then you'll have your job to do and I'll have mine. And that was kind of a profound moment. It was the realization that all the relationships that I had come to revere and that were important to my life were going to be altered at this point in time. They were going to be different. The Post Crescent was no longer going to be our friend in terms of the Sackett drive. They were now going to be responsible for responsible reporting around this issue at Goodwill. It happened that morning, too, that my daughter Kristen was flying in with her first grandchild, and I was going to meet her at the airport and pick her up, and we were scheduled to have a nice weekend that weekend, so I flip out to the airport and I pick up Christy, and she's a very savvy businesswoman, by the way, and so I'm explaining to her on the fly that we've got this situation, and I love your new baby, and and all that kind of stuff. And I had then been hailed to the Post Crescent office by Ed Culhane, who was a book club friend of mine, to report on this issue. And if you know Ed at all, he's a wonderful writer and a lovely guy, but he mostly writes about trout, and we were talking about business. And so it was really a difficult conversation because we were working really hard to have him understand what had happened and the business lingo and the accounting lingo and all the rest of it. And so at one point during that piece of business, a young woman came in, a photographer, and she said, you know, we've gone through our file footage, and the only pictures we have of you are you going, and that's not going to work. This is a different kind of story. And so I said, okay, what do we want to do? And she said, well, come over in the corner and stand like this, and let me darken it up a little bit and take your picture. So they did, and so now they have these new pictures of me. And the following morning, a Sunday morning, after calling a billion people and trying to meet my new grandson and trying to deal with what we knew were going to be the ramifications of this issue, I walk out on the porch and there it is, above the fold on the first page, Goodwill embezzlement, and my picture. And here's how weird things happen. My friend Bill Hotchkiss and his wife Mimi had gone up to their cottage and came home late Sunday night. And Mimi ran out to the porch to fetch the Post Crescent and ran into the kitchen and said, "Bill, my God, look what Bob did." And so you just sort of sense the impact that something like this has, at least on one person's life. But also understand, at that point in time, we had 1,000 other employees who were learning about it for the first time on Sunday morning. And also we had to go through the business of explaining to our board of directors what we thought we knew at that point in time. So Monday morning we have a meeting of our board, and one of the most dramatic times of my life happened that morning when I knew that I had to leave that meeting and let the board do their work. And I wandered out of that meeting and I wandered into my office and I closed the door and I sat for 2 hours. And I'm kind of a tough old bird. I'm in my, just finished my 67th lap around the sun. I've experienced just about everything there is to experience in life, but that 2 hour period of time was one of the most difficult times of my life because I was at the top of my career and it was on my watch and it was a really powerful piece of business that we were having to deal with. And so you can imagine what kind of solitude that feels like for that 2 hours. And the happiest moment of my life was when the board opened the door and said, "We've deliberated, take your team and fix this. We trust you. We trust you to get this job done." Well, that was just huge. But here's the thing. For the first time in my life, I had never imagined myself a victim. You know, I had been pushed around as a kid in Chicago and stuff like that, but never victim with a capital V. And what happens when something like this happens is there's a whole system that takes over in your life, the criminal justice system and the courts. And all of a sudden, I had a victim offender counselor. And that person was supposed to start talking to me about what does it feel like and how you doing and is there anything we can do for you. And, oh, by the way, we're going to want you to write a victim impact statement when it comes to sentencing. And so it was a whole new paradigm. It was one that I was completely not used to. And so we went through the course of that summer figuring it out, digging deeper and deeper into the financial implications. And one of the things that we knew we needed to do was talk with our people, 1,000 people who read about this in the paper. And their questions were really different from my concerns. I was worried about loss of reputation and Goodwill's image in the community and a whole host of other things. And what they were worried about is, are we going to be open next week? Will I have a check? When she took money, did it come out of my pension fund? Will Goodwill be really damaged by this? So they had 46 questions that we hustled out of them through focus groups. And so I sat with everyone in the organization and answered those questions as honestly as I could at the time, given the data that I had at the time, and we moved on. So in the fall of that year, we gathered in the court in Winnebago County, and we watched her be sentenced to 5 years in jail. Determinate sentence. Five means five. She was going off for five, and then she was going to be on paper for 5 years following her release. And what I need to tell you, going back to that construct of punishment and retribution versus rehabilitation and restoration, was I was clearly on the punishment team. I had been hurt. I had been challenged. An organization that I loved had been threatened. People that I cared about in that organization had been damaged. And so when I wrote the victim impact statement, I teed it up in terms of opportunity loss. What would have happened if we had had that $525,000? What good could we have done? We could have served 200 kids with disabilities, infants and toddlers, and given them OTPT, speech, home intervention, early childhood education. We could have found 1,000 jobs for unemployed people. And the amount of energy that it took for Goodwill to make 525,000 dollars was fundamentally 3 months of our business. 1,000 people working for 3 months to create that much capital. And so at the end of my victim impact statement, I basically said, throw the book at her. I'm angry. I really want her to be punished for this. And in some respects, it was sort of a righteous kind of feeling. You know, it was the kind of sense that this was supposed to be. This is how the world works. Somebody in yesterday's service suggested that that's Old Testament thinking. That's eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. And, you know, you didn't lean hard enough into the New Testament. But I got to tell you, on a personal level, I wasn't able to lean into that because I was kind of damaged goods. In fact, when I look back on it now, these 9 years later, I was going through some like post-traumatic stress thing. You know, I had to be the person who was on point. I had to continue to lead. I had to fix this problem. I had to deal with the courts. I had to deal with the insurance companies. I had to deal with this and that. And it was distracting and it was stressful. So I was angry. And when she went off to prison, I was a happy camper, as were all the other people who wrote victim impact statements, the chairman of our board, the treasurer of our organization, the people she worked with and came to trust her and who she betrayed. And by the way, if you want to read this part of the story, if you go online to goodwillncw.org, there's a link at the top that drops down and it says Betrayal, that's the book. One of the things we did when this happened to us was we decided we need to learn from this. We need to make something out of this. And so we wrote a book. A wonderful writer named Jed Block joined our team for a period of time, ran a bunch of interviews, and wrote this book called Betrayal. And it's actually been in print now. There are 20,000 copies of it around the country. And one of the things that's happened to me as a result of this experience is that I'm now called on regularly to do this kind of talking with people, because that crime of embezzlement is pandemic. I can tell you just in the last month I've had 4 calls from both private, not-for-profit, and governmental organizations that have had people steal from them. And in our case, it was hooked to gambling. Carol was a compulsive gambler. She actually gambled through $250,000 of her own family money and then gambled through $525,000 of our money. And to talk about compulsion, when we discovered in the records afterwards what her gambling habits were, all of that money went into dime slots. Can you imagine? I mean, the compulsivity of... I thought she should have had arms like Popeye, you know, these big forearms from pulling levers and stuff. So here we are. Carol's in jail. We're feeling, you know, like we're beginning to recover. The other thing I would share with you is by the end of that year, we had the best donations ever, the best sales ever, and more people served than we ever had in our history. And so we really did well. We managed it well. So I'm crabby. And my wife tells me I'm crabby fairly regularly. And she says, you've got to do something about this because you're just not yourself. And this is a year out. I mean, this is past the sentencing and all the rest of it. I'm still kind of scruffy. And so all of a sudden this little epiphany happened. And it goes something like this. Goodwill Industries' first corporate value is we put people first. And we're now in a situation where we say, we put people first, dot, 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 all except for Carol Brown. That's an awful place to be. Because every day of the week, Carol Brown comes through our door. Every hour of every day of the week, Carol Brown comes through our door. And now all of a sudden, we're stuck with this one human being who, because she had damaged us, was now in a position where she was the only person on the planet we couldn't put first. And if we were going to be true to the values of our organization and true to our nature and true to the rehabilitation process, and if we were really going to stand up for what we believe in, we were going to have to alter that path. We were going to have to figure out some way to change that. And it also happened at that point in time that we were becoming very good at a program called Restorative Justice. It's a different way of looking at people who have been damaged by one another. And it's a way that brings people together, victims and perpetrators, in a mediation process that helps them come to some fundamental understanding of, can we live together on this planet? And can we care for one another? And can we understand the why of this? And so one afternoon I called our restorative justice people up and said, sign me up. I want to be a client. Because I want to be able, when Carol is released, to meet her on the street and say, how can we help? And I still wasn't in that place yet. I was still angry. And I also need you to know that that wasn't going to change unless I became completely certain that she was really getting down to the core issues in her life that caused this to happen. Because if she wasn't in a place where she could heal, this wasn't going to be a useful exercise. She needed to have a deeper understanding of what was going on in her life. So the restorative justice counselor started working with Carol and I, and at first they were the people who moved information back and forth. Carol and I had not yet met. We're 2 years from her sentencing out now. And so we started this conversation using the counselors as the vehicle for moving information. And at one point I said to them, give her the book. And so they delivered the book, and then I didn't hear from her for 90 days. And what the counselor said was, she read the book and she's broken. She's shattered. She had no clue until she read the book, the impact that what she had done had. Because she was still in that sort of good duck, bad duck place in Disney, you know, where the devil's telling you to do one thing and the good duck's saying do the other thing and the little devil duck wins. She was still wanting to say that I'm a good person and I'm addicted and gambling is the problem and I had no control and all the rest of that. She wasn't at that point of recovery where she could look in the mirror and say, I own this. What happened as a result of this, I own. Well, after about 90 days and her going through this sort of grieving, mourning, churning process, she finally popped open again and said, okay, let's continue. And so we did. And so then on an October afternoon, 2 years out from sentencing, I pull into the Burke Correctional Facility and get out of my car. And if you haven't gone to prison lately, you should. It's quite a remarkable experience to walk through that door and have doors slammed behind you and little things punched on your skin that glow in the dark and all that kind of stuff. And the realization that people who are residing here are residing under very, very trying and difficult circumstances. So I get in this room and I sit down and it's really sterile and stark and the door opens and it's Carol. I hadn't seen her now in 2 years. And we sat in a couple chairs across from each other and with the mediators mediating and she and I chatting, we went through just a ton of stuff, a ton of stuff. She had to hear how hurt I was. I had to hear how she was on her journey. And finally, at the end of that, there came a point in time where it was time to go, and I accomplished what I set out to do, and that was to stand up and give her a hug and say, if there's anything we can do when you're out, short of an accounting job, let me know, and gave her a hug and left. So one of the things that's happened as a result of this experience and as a result of being a poster child for restorative justice is I go into prisons fairly regularly now and I talk with the guys and with the women about this whole concept of restorative justice and how important it can be and how meaningful it can be and how it impacted my life. And in one session with those guys, one of the guys said, well, have you seen her? And I thought, no, I haven't. Not since we hugged and I left, and that's 2.5 years ago. And so I got back to the shop, and I got out a little note card, one of our little Goodwill note cards, and I wrote a note to Carol, and I said, so how you doing? How about coffee? And so I sent it off through the snail mail, and about a week later I get a card back from Carol saying, I would love to. And here's my telephone number, and I'm working at the library, and I'm working at the Y, and here's my hours, and so let's try to figure out how to get together. So I suggested we go to the Harmony Cafe and have coffee. And so that morning, Carol and I met, and it was really kind of a joyful morning. We were able to just sit and chat and jabber and catch up on her life and catch up on my life, and we did that for about an hour and a half. And then I thought, there are others on our team who need to have coffee with Carol because they're still hurting and they're still needing to make that connection back again. And by the way, we've offered restorative justice to all of the other team members who were really sort of victimized by her, who had been dear friends of hers, who were just completely shocked when all of this happened. And so we're working through a healing process with those folks as well. And on about the third occasion, she said, you know, I'm really struggling because I'm wishing there was some way that I could use this experience to teach others, to do things that would somehow atone for this. And so I said, well, what if you and I started presenting together? Your perspective, my perspective, our journey, sharing the story from our perspectives. What do you think about that idea? And she said, well, that would really be something, wouldn't it? And I said, yeah, it would. Let's think about that. So one of the things that I wanted to do to make sure that we could do that and do it well was I needed her to hear me make my most brutal presentation about fraud, saying her name out loud, because she needed to understand that when I do my piece of this game, I have to help people understand what a trying experience it is when somebody goes through this kind of experience in their life. And she managed through that very well. You know, there were times when she would get weepy. There were times when she didn't want to hear what I have to say. But we practiced that enough to get to a point where she could go through it and be composed and then do her piece of it. So on four different occasions now, Carol and I have gone into prison together and met with inmates and talked about this whole experience from the perspective of the victim and from the perspective of the perpetrator and now the person who's trying to make a change in her life significant enough that she can begin to feel like she's making up for or atoning for the damage that she caused as a result of the act. So if you go back to the opening of this little opportunity for me, there's this concept of punishment and retribution and rehabilitation and restoration. And I wouldn't for a minute suggest to you that it's an either-or universe, because one of the things that I learned when I was with Carol, when she would talk about her experience was, and this is going to sound probably a little odd, she said, I needed to be punished. I needed that first day in prison when the door slammed behind me, and I knew that for the next 5 years, I was not going to have any control over freedoms in my life. I needed that time. I needed not only the experience of incarceration, but I needed the opportunity to really search my soul and get to a place where I could understand what I was about and where I could understand how I could go on with my life, reconnect with my husband. By the way, her husband went to jail for a year because he was part of the issue. She was laundering cash through his business. And so she had all of these people that she had to become whole with again. And her claim to you, where she's sitting here, in fact, we tried to have her here, but she had to work this weekend. We were going to present together, she and I. But I also know, too, on the other hand, that as a part of this process, being able to reconcile, being able to reconstruct lives is as important and probably dramatic as incarceration and punishment are. So what I'm sitting here with now is kind of a balanced view of this after having experienced this whole process for the last 9 years and arriving at a place now where if Carol were here, we'd be pals and we could talk together and we could share with you. And I just wanted to come and share that experience with you because I think it's an important part of life. And the reason I think it's important is because I really believe that we need to rethink the entire criminal justice system. It's a broken system. And here's the fact that just keeps me actively engaged in trying to think about it. The United States of America represents 5% of the world's population. And we incarcerate 25% of the people who are currently locked up on the planet. 5% of the world's population, 25% of the people who are locked up in our country. And so we've got a broken system. We have a system that needs a lot of thought and a lot of consideration and a lot of reconstruction and rethinking. And my experience has put me in a place now where I'm almost on a daily basis actively engaged in helping people think about that and bringing attention to it. So that's my story. I'm sticking with it. And I'll pause at this point in time, which I think is your custom, and be present for any questions that you might have.